Beautiful. Excellent. Past can be a tricky thing. Because of the past minutes of this service will go past the hour. Just thought I'd warn you. I will not cut my sermon down to 5 minutes. It's hard to remember sometimes. Heard of a turtle. Turtle was crossing a road when he was mugged by a gang of criminal snails. When the police came and they asked him, what happened? He said, I don't know. It just all happened so fast. As you may know, I simplify the tasks of interim ministry into three sections. First, I help all of you look back. Then I help you look around. And then I help you look forward. But why this first one? Why look back? Aristotle, that ancient foundation of Western thought, wrote, one thing alone not even God can do to make undone whatever has been done. And one woman noted, well, you really can't change the past, but you can dwell on it until it makes you old and bitter. It is common to think of the past as unchangeable and only the future is open. And there's so much theology actually about fate and destiny that tell us the past and the present, maybe even the future, are set. Back in the 1900s, the key enemies of universalists were the Presbyterians, who were strict Calvinists and believed in predestinarian, the absolute control of God. And it was said that they believed so much in predestiny that when a Presbyterian minister fell down the stairs, he'd dust himself off and say, well, that was bound to happen. But a liberating truth of our faith, a liberating truth of reality itself, is that the fates are not in control. And it is not only the future that is open. The past is never over and gone and done with. There's a character in William Faulkner's story, Requiem for a Nun, who notes, the past is not dead. It's not even past. The past lives in the present. And it's changeable because the present is always changing. The most common experiences of this is this idea that the past was always better than now. People of Judea looking back to this ancient past, this scroll that they had forgotten, the words of the past, that they completely let go of it. And they said, oh, we have to go back to that. And I've been staying for a while. I stayed in the Lisa Schaefer and Steve Bartram's house, and they have a little wooden plaque that says, the older I get, the better I was. We think back to the past and we imagine that things were better. We're changing the past, in fact. For when we look back, it was a complicated time and there were many things going on. And now notice I'm not talking about the difficulty of determining actual facts and past events. Historians struggle with this all the time, what really exactly happened. It's really about how we remember it. And I'm not talking about the difficulty, the basic difficulty of just remembering, which is very pervasive in our experience, especially after we're about 40. I'm talking about how we shape our understanding of past events. So the question today is not how do we remember, or not do we remember, but how do we remember? And I tell these stories about Coyote. I often tell Coyote stories because I see him as the perfect UU deity, the perfect UU guide. He's very clever, but he still gets confused and does some really stupid things, right? And he's very creative, and he's very powerful. He's the source of blessings and good things in the world, and he's totally, totally, absolutely convinced of his inherent worth and dignity. And yet, he can be a self-serving fool. He can be a destructive trickster. I remind you that we are often just like him so that we can be a little less like him. And today he reminds us that we can misunderstand the past, or we can change the way we think about the past. We can change what the past means for us today. And that is both a blessing and a curse. I've long found state seals, and I've been traveling. I've had to travel in my life, and so every state I go to, I learn about the state seal. And I like them because they're these icons of the past. They're often these very simple visual icons of what were dominant ideas in the past in the forming of a state. Recently, I was reading about the Algonquin people who were demanding some change in the state seal of the state of Massachusetts. In the state of Massachusetts, there's an ancient image of an Algonquin person from the 1700s or something, and he's got a bow in one hand that's against the ground, and he's got an arrow pointed down. And this was a colonialist image of peace, of at the end of violence. But right above the head of this Algonquin person, ancestor, is a sword. It's actually the arm of Miles Standish, who's one of the settlers, and he has this broadsword, just this sword, an arm with a sword hanging over the head of the Algonquin person. And so the people who, the white people who are trying to remember the great history of the victory over the British and, revolution and freedom, see it one way. But the Algonquin people say a passive-looking one of our ancestors with a sword over his head is not an image of peace. It is not an image of justice. It is not an image of the Massachusetts we want to live in. And it denies the actual fact of violence and struggle that we are facing even to this day. It reminds us of the history that has limited who we are. The past is still alive today. It is not dead. So look to your past. By the way, I just looked at the California state seal, and there are no Native American people referenced in any way on that symbol, nor are there no First Nations, nor is there any reference to the Spaniards at all. There is a bear. There's Athena. I'm not sure what the Greek goddess or Minerva. It was the Greek goddess Minerva. And there's a miner. There's a white guy mining with a pickaxe. But no First Nations. What does that say about who we are and what we think about? So look to your past and look to your individual past. Oftentimes bad things happen in our life that will trap the way we think about ourselves. We'll think of ourselves as fools. We think of ourselves as victims. We think of ourselves as wounded. And we carry those labels with us because of how we think about our own past. Maybe like Coyote, we carry things that lift us up a little bit higher than we need to be lifted up. And we need to look to our past to revise our past. I was just listening to a podcast about the murder of James Reeb. So it was a podcast on National Public Radio called White Lies. And some young journalists went down to Selma to look and find out what happened. Why was no one ever convicted for that murder? And we find out that, and what they found out very quickly, is that there are two very different stories about what happened in Selma that night, about the death of James Reeb and who actually killed him. I encourage you to go back and hear and learn about those divergent stories. The wonderful last episode brings descendants of the people, the victim and the murderer, together again to tell the whole story, to tell the history more full. We need to look to our past and how we tell the story of our past. The title of this sermon, "The Past Is Yet to Be Determined," came from a colleague of mine, an elder colleague of mine named Robert Latham. Dynamic guy. And he, when he was only 12 years old, this is back in the 1940s, came down with polio. At the time, the doctors told his family, "Your son is probably going to die." And the family, who is a very devout Christian family, Baptist family, said, "We are going to be praying." They wanted to tell the doctors this, so the doctors remembered. They said, "We are going to be praying, and God has power over all things, even over death." And so the doctor said, "Well, then our advice is that you better pray for death, because life after polio will be one of misery and disability." But the family didn't accept the future vision. Now, it just turned out that at this time there was a woman named Elizabeth Kenny in Australia who had developed a new treatment for children of polio. The standard treatment was to put children's limbs into rigid casts so that if the polio bent their bones, it would not twist them as far. And she completely rejected that, got the cast off the children and put them on, and instead put warm compress or hot compresses on their joints. And the doctors that were treating Robert decided to try this. They didn't think it was going to work at all, but they, it was sort of like a clinical trial. We'll just show that it's totally ineffective. Robert got better. Robert was completely cured and healed and whole. Now, all these facts are not in dispute. What Robert noticed immediately was there were very divergent interpretations of what had just happened. What just happened? His family, who'd already been kind of noticing some of his skills and some of his capabilities, knew that this was a sign. This was God's miraculous supernatural power working in the world so that he would go on to be a great preacher of the gospel, that he would speak about Jesus Christ and the salvific power of Jesus in the world, right? And the doctors, and they told him this, they told Robert, this is how what they understood had just happened. And then the doctors, at the same time, realized that human beings sometimes make mistakes. They had made errors, but human progress, human intelligence, science was moving forward. And the miracle was that people were coming up with new ways to address ancient illnesses and to free people from the restrictions that they placed on us. This was their understanding, and they told him this. Well, at first he accepted his family's interpretation as gospel. He became, as a young man, a fiery, powerful Baptist preacher. He knew what the past had done for him. He knew who he was. It had shaped who he was. But as he grew, the other story, the other understanding started to tug on his sleeve, and then it began to press on him more and more heavily, and he began to realize the two very divergent understandings of the past were fighting for his soul. And if any of you understand the history of the 20th century, you know that that struggle, the struggle in American culture, lives with us today. The polarity and the polarization began way back in the 1800s when some Christians came up with the fundamentals of Christianity. And he was being pulled, and he knew, he just understood that if one was to win over the other, he would be split and it would destroy him. And then it came to him. It came to him that there was another way of understanding the past. He held on to the notion of God working to save him and to cure him from this disease, but he understood that God was working through science. God was working through human care. God, the supernatural healing power, something amazing in the world, was working in the world. And that's what saved him. And he was there to preach for that. And he began to preach about how truth is being revealed in every moment, ongoing. It's an unfolding revelation. And he began to speak about the powers that are moving in the world to bring people to greater harmony and wholeness and justice. He began to say that the past is not set in stone. The truth is not set in stone. And because many of his Baptist colleagues did not like his new orientation to the past, he became a Unitarian Universalist and changed even me. So as we look, we need to look to the past to find those things that inspire us and guide us, but also to realize that we are not trapped by the past, nor is the past trapped by itself, but it is part of the creative, ongoing work, the power of wholeness and goodness. The story that we tell of our nation's past, as we think of racism, do we think that, oh, we solved racism back in the civil rights era? We solved racism back when we fought the Civil War? Or do we understand that some people still think that was a war between the states for states' rights? Do we understand that we are still living in the past, carrying it forward with us, and that we can change our understanding of what the past is doing now? We can wake up and tell the story differently, because the past is not yet determined. The future is not sealed, and all of us are moving through time like a turtle, slowly crossing a dangerous road.